This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, well, it's always a great day when I have Bill Larson of Larson & Larson in the studio with me. Hi, Bill. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, wow. It's a little chilly out there, a little nippy.
Nice, yes.
Nice, a little change for us. It's still beautiful, absolutely beautiful. We've been having these wonderful blue skies. It's so gorgeous here. Wow. I was, when I went to BoucherCon, back in Dallas, just 2 months ago. It's so funny. I still am backlogged with emails from people. I've got so many. And I met at BoucherCon, there were about 1,800 people this year. It was really big. Mm-hmm. And so I got to meet hundreds and hundreds of authors. And it was wonderful. I got to meet hundreds of fans. So I've been getting all these emails. But in between, I've been getting also these questions. And it's funny, at BoucherCon, I did hear a few tragic stories from authors about intellectual property that they have lost.
Yes.
A few who are still fighting. They wrote books when they were younger. And now the sort of books were, you know, in the old days when you wrote books, you were with a publisher,
yes,
and then they stopped publishing, and then the books disappear, and unless you find them in a secondhand bookstore, you don't have them. And so I talked to an author there whose name I can't say yet, although he thinks if he wins his case, he will come on and talk about it, because he wrote some nice stories when he was young. He looks back at them now, and he says, they're really nice stories. I would like to put them up. Mm-hmm. He cannot get them back from the publisher. Now, the publisher, it looks like, now that he's, you know, famous and well-known, wants to put them together in a book. And they're not really all the same, about the same thing. He's just going to put them in a book and publish it. And so there's no, what rights does he have? It's a big mess. He says it is an absolute mess. And he didn't know when he wrote those stories, when he was like 20, in his 20s, that he was going to ever go back to writing and become literally world famous.
I mean, he may have sold his rights to the publisher.
Yeah.
Unintentionally.
He did, unintentionally. And now they want to, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, and it's like the third publisher says that company closed, and that company closed. And these things pass on. I mean,
Taylor Swift's having the same problem right now with her early music.
Oh, yeah. I didn't quite understand what happened with her.
She sold the rights, apparently, to a lot of songs and was picked up by a fella who now is in a fight with her over her use of her own songs.
Well, yeah. Why would she? Well, she was so young and so...
And didn't realize, yeah.
Yeah, didn't realize the,
mm-hmm,
value.
Yeah.
Didn't know that. And that's the same situation with this guy. I mean, mm-hmm, he is so famous. I'm so eager
this
to get him on.
This has happened to artists and musicians throughout history. This is nothing new.
Mozart probably suffered the same thing, right?
No, not Mozart.
Well, but the thing is, I know, you know, growing up in Detroit and Motown, I know that all of these artists were,
a lot
I mean,
of the
they
old
were
rockers,
ripped off.
Yeah, and a lot of the old black artists, their music was taken from them.
Completely ripped off,
yeah.
Completely, and
so
I loved all of
this. So this has been going on for a while, and that's why we have the laws to try to protect the artists and the musicians.
And that's why when you have, it's so funny, the word is right there, intellectual property. The word property is right there. Mm-hmm. And yet, I talk to authors, and they don't visualize it as an asset. They don't see it. And I say, it's an asset. And it's like this guy. He was, you know, young, and he wrote really nice stories. But then he went on into another career completely outside of writing. and didn't have time until 20 years later to get back to his writing, which is what he really loved. You know, of course, he worked for 20 years in a job that made him lots of money, but it wasn't a love. And now he's world famous, and he just, it's really annoying. You know, it's really a thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, with the whisk of a pen, you can give away all your rights unintentionally if you don't carefully read your contract.
That's why I'm telling everyone, I have a little personal experience on that, on not having an intellectual property lawyer. Now, Bill Larson, his firm is Larson & Larson. And what is the organization you belong to?
The American Intellectual Property Law Association, which is a collection of patent, trademark, and copyright attorneys from around the world.
And these guys and gals know what they are doing because it is a really complicated area of law.
It is.
It's not real estate.
And in flux, constantly changing.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, it's not your the lawyer who's going to do your will. It's not the family lawyer. This is really complicated law because, as you said, one little sentence, and I can tell you for a fact, one little sentence changed everything for me because I was young and naive. So I'm just telling everybody. Now, let's talk a little bit about this. I love this case because Nora Law, of course, everybody, Nora Roberts is so world famous. She half a billion books. I mean, think of that, people. Nora Roberts has written half a billion books. It's like I think only Robin Cook and a few others have reached that level. Mm-hmm. And she had a major lawsuit.
Yeah, she's filed a lawsuit in Brazil against a woman accused of copyright infringement.
Yeah.
And she's got the money to back it up.
Absolutely. And this woman just was taking parts of her books and and putting them together. I'm not sure how to pronounce the lady's name. Tsuruya, something like that. Tsuruya, Christine Tsuruya, I think.
Right. And so interesting, she filed in Brazil.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked before about the fact that if you file a copyright application and get registration in the United States, you automatically get, through reciprocity, registration and protection in all the member countries. And Brazil is one of those countries. So she can sue anywhere she wants. It's interesting that she sued in Brazil and didn't bring the case in the United States.
Yeah.
But maybe there was some issues of getting a jurisdiction over the woman herself.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the books were being sold in the United States, so there would be a jurisdiction because the infringement occurred here. But I think she went down there to get her where she lives. And I have a lot of very good Brazilian friends who are intellectual property attorneys. And so she's got a big problem.
Exactly. And
the defendant has a big problem.
Yeah, and through this lawsuit, Nora Roberts has discovered that she wasn't just ripping off Nora. She was ripping off a lot of...
That's the allegation, yes.
There's other authors
mass
involved.
Mass plagiarism,
Wholesale. You could just go and copy this and copy this. Well, you know, it's...
I don't think Nora is a woman to mess around with. She seems like she has a lot of contention.
Oh, no. I love what she said. I mean, this is one woman you don't... I'm going to read what she said because this is so good. If you plagiarize, I will come for you. If you take my work, you will pay for it, and I will do my best to see you don't write again.
That sounds pretty powerful.
Yeah. Now, this is one strong woman.
Yeah, I wouldn't mess with her.
No, I wouldn't mess with her. I would.
I'm pretty sure she has the best lawyers in the United States and Brazil
and
on her
world.
Side.
Any place in the
any
world.
In the world, I mean, right.
Anyone who sells... that number of books.
And she's also stated that any recovery that she was going to donate to charity.
Yeah, of course.
So she's not in it for the money.
No.
She's in it for the principle.
Exactly. And, you know, people will try anything, you know, sometimes to make a buck. And in this case, it looks like...
This is why we have the law, because there's a lot of people that steal. And remember, the copyright is in the Constitution of the United States. It's one of the things that the founders did not argue over. They recognized that it was necessary.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, we've just been going through that with the whole trade deal with China, because they have been famous forever.
Yes, there are a lot of infringement going on in China. A lot of my work right now is in China, trying to shut down infringements in China. It's getting better.
It's getting better.
China's coming around.
Yeah, because they do, and I know...
Well, they want to do business here, so, you know, now the current administration is really coming down on them hard for intellectual property violations.
Because it is... This is what I'm always telling you authors out there. You work so hard. You give sometimes years to just writing one book. Mm-hmm. You put in hundreds, thousands of hours to that book. And then to have someone come along and just copy
take it and
sell it. And another author that I met and who she writes children's books. And in her case, all her children's books, complete with the illustrations, her own illustrations, they're her illustrations. She drew those illustrations. She's an artist and writes, you know, kids, lovely kids' books, picture books. They were reprinted by a company in one of the countries around China, but not China itself, but at one of those companies, and in all different languages, in like, you know, 20 different languages. And it wasn't until somebody was in Hungary, I believe, and said, oh, I didn't know you were selling books in Hungary. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm not. And then they found out they were selling the same book in Latvia and this and this and this. They just put in you know.
Put it in print and send it to the stores.
Exactly.
Until you get caught.
Exactly. And so.
And then you're forced to go country by country to enforce it. And it's very
expensive.
She's
Australian. So she mm-hmm. was, she yeah. had done this in Australia. She's now, she'd moved to America. I don't know if she could take it anymore. But this is, you know, a serious problem, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah, it is.
Wow. People, there's a lot, you have a lot to learn when you're an author. There, you have to do so many things. It's really difficult to be an author.
But the process of copyright registration is so easy.
It's easy.
Yes, and you don't even have to have a lawyer. If you go to the copyright website, it'll walk you through it. You take out your credit card, pay your $35, upload your work, and there it is.
And that's it. Yeah. And that's it.
A year later, you get your registration. It takes a year.
It takes a year. It's funny. I know it's strange, but it gets there eventually. Mm-hmm. It gets there eventually.
Right. Once and you have it forever.
That's it.
Yep.
And
that's the only proof positive that you're the evidence that you're the author. Remember, we've talked about mailing it to yourself means nothing.
Yeah.
That's an urban legend. It doesn't.
Or like a lot of quite a few authors are doing this, and I also told them this isn't the right way to go about it. Many authors are getting these emails from Hollywood and that say, you know, your book, we like your book and we can turn it into a script for you. And, mm-hmm. you know, some of them fall for that scam and pay the money to have somebody write a script for them. It's not the way it happens. But then some decide, okay, well, since Hollywood wants my book, somebody in Hollywood read my book, somebody thinks it's really great, mm-hmm. maybe I should write the script myself. And so they will then work, and they will study, and they'll learn, and they think they will learn because it's not as easy to write a script as you imagine. I know one author. I mean, he wrote an absolutely beautiful book, really great. But a book, you know, it's 370 pages, something like that. And he comes to me and he said, "Oh, I decided to write a script," because he knows that I wrote script, and he thought, oh, "I wrote a script." And, I mean, I took a look at it. He had no idea what he's doing. But he went ahead and registered it with WGA West, Writers Guild of America, the Los Angeles. You get a nice little certificate that says WGAW on it. And, you know, I have a bunch of those things. But that's not a replacement for a copyright.
No. Copyright's the only way to protect it in court.
Yeah. But people will see that. And again, I'm telling people, if you write the script and then you put WGAW on the bottom of the thing and you send it to Hollywood, that does not protect you.
Yep.
People think, I mean, I talk to people, they actually think, okay, they write the script and then they'll send it to they'll send it off. 10 copies to 10 different, you know, producers they see in Hollywood, and it because it has a WGAW on it, they're protected.
No.
I hate to
Got to copyright it.
Let's break the news to them, Bill. What should we say to those people?
Right. Go to the Copyright Office website. Go to the form. You fill in the form. Upload your information, whatever your work is. Pay the $35, and then you're done.
Yeah.
It takes 5 minutes.
Yeah. Because believe me, anyway, they'll even with the copyright on it, they'll try to steal it in Hollywood.
At least you'll have a remedy in court. Without a copyright registration, they'll dismiss your case in court. You have to have it registered or you can't sue.
Exactly.
Supreme Court law.
That's the law. And that's it's the only way you can protect yourself. Mm-hmm. So do not just...
Very powerful rules, too, for plaintiffs in these cases.
Yeah.
Because you get statutory damages. You know, in a lot of cases, it's hard to prove how much money you lost. So the statute provides a certain amount of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars that you can get without showing any actual damages. You get your attorney's fees and costs back. So you can really put a hurt on the defendant with a copyright case. I defend a lot of them, and they're very tough. I usually settle them for my clients because if you lose, you're going to get whacked bad financially.
Huh. Okay. So this is what it's so important to do things right. If you're an author, if you owned a business, if you decided to open a cupcake bakery, what would you do? What would you do? You would get a lawyer. You would get a lawyer because you know that you have to have everything done legally and correctly, and you never know what's going to happen in the future. And that's exactly the same thing here. And we've had some questions again about trademarks. Yep. People go through this whole thing of, you know, Baby Yoda comes out, and is that trademarked? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we had a great question here. From one of the listeners, explain again how you copyright a title. And we've said before, you can't, all right? You cannot copyright the title of a book. Just can't, the law doesn't provide for it. However, you can get a trademark, okay? All right, if it's in a series, okay, and it becomes a franchise. That's the best way to protect it. So the single title of a single work cannot be protected, okay? You can't protect the title. That's just the way the law is. It has to be something more like Star Wars, okay? That's a series. That's a franchise. So that's a trademark, obviously, for all the goods and services, and then a copyright for all of the content and the name.
Yeah.
But it has to be a series. It can't be a single. It just can't be a single word for a title of a single book.
Well, yeah.
It's not protectable.
Please, I don't want another book written called Resurrection. I mean, there's like book after book with the same title, and it's really aggravating when you're doing a search and you find, you know, 30. Recently I had a book come to me, and I mean, I of course I had seen the title before, and then I looked it up and I saw like on Amazon, you know, 20 of the mm-hmm. same title.
The same goes for titles of songs. You can't protect the title of a song.
Yeah. No. And that reminds me of the other question about, can you use the lyrics in a book? Can you note them down?
Right. And so, as we've discussed before, our default setting is no, you can't. And then after you tell yourself no, you can't, then you go look and see if maybe you can.
Yeah.
All right. But you always start with the no, don't do it.
Yeah.
Because it's more likely that it's protected. So in this case, yes, those lyrics are protected. Whether you can take a little snippet and that'll cause a problem is hard to say, but, you know, you would want to say don't do it.
Yeah.
If you're doing it in the context of a factual book, okay, and you're stating facts as part of a historical account, then you can do it, all right? But if it's not...
Yeah, like the Beatles wrote this song and these are the lyrics and...
Yeah. Right. So if you're talking about history, no one owns history. Everybody owns history. So no one has an exclusive right to mention anything about history. But in any other context, if it's not newsworthy, or it's not historical or something like that, under what we call fair use, then you can't do it because it's other people's property.
Okay, again, this is something, you know, people are always trying. Everybody likes to just sort of stretch things and see how far it can go.
Absolutely.
Which is what keeps you in mm-hmm. business.
Well, these are the things that help sell.
Yeah.
Okay, because it does bring out memories and emotions and stuff for people, so it does enhance the work. And you can do it, you just have to go get a license for it. Like, for instance, music, you can play any music you want, but you just have to pay for it. It's called compulsory licensing. We've decided that we're not going to let musicians sue people and tell them, that, no, you can't play my song. You can play this song. You just got to pay for it.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, how long was Happy Birthday not allowed? That went on for years.
Yeah, it was probably the most profitable song ever written.
It just went on and on.
Because you get 100 years of protection, so.
Wow. And I wonder how many millions of times that.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of money to be made in not only the music, but the works, and then the appearance of the person, like Elvis or Marilyn Monroe, right? I mean, they're still making a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. I just saw a new Marilyn Monroe commercial.
Yeah, just came out with some new, and they paid a lot of money for her likeness. I think it was for perfume or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And the very mere, her likeness there will probably increase sales a million times over.
Yeah.
Because she's so famous.
Yeah.
Right? She's frozen in time, beautiful and young.
And nowadays, with this CGI and stuff, they're taking current actors and turning them young again. did you see that?
With computers.
Did you see that the Irishman movie?
No.
They did that to those two actors, Al Pacino and the other one, and they're old. They don't look that good anymore, I can tell you. But they right on the screen they. You know, put them back in time. It looks funny, actually. I didn't like it. I found it very annoying. I didn't like the concept of doing that. As I'm watching the film, I'm so aware of them, you know, working on the faces that I really couldn't concentrate on the dialogue that was going on. I was looking at, well, how did they take the wrinkles out? And you know, in live action, I mean, they're actually, you know, acting and. But I'm sure they had to sign all sorts of releases to use their image like that forever and people
and pay
and pay them. I'm sure
that's how these folks make money. So they're willing to take your money.
Oh yeah,
pay them and then you can use the image. You may have to pay a lot, but
yeah,
you're probably going to make a lot.
But you can. That's it. Well, I just want to. It's the end of the year, and I want to thank you so much for all you do for Joy on Paper and my listeners are we have some local authors who are building up their reputations, and I have hopes for quite a few who have really great projects, really great books, and I'm hoping that they can get legitimate offers for film work, you know, to have their books picked up, and they'll come to you because they're with this new streaming videos. And they're expanding. They need so much product. And so I'm so happy when I come across a book.
Years ago, there was only print.
Yeah.
Now we have a million different ways
to do it. Which is why intellectual property is complicated. Because you have to plan for the future. You don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Right. Science is always a step ahead of the law.
That's right. And people come out with new ideas, new concepts, and you never know.
That's why the laws are constantly changing and trying to keep up with the new formats.
Exactly. And I'm going to be talking in a little while to an author who has been thinking about what's going to happen in the future. And he's come out with some wonderful, wonderful concepts. So this is really exciting for me today. Anyway, I want to thank you so much for coming in today. Again, tell us where people can reach you.
We're at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Okay.
Our website.
Go there. And also, if you have a question, check my website out, Radio Joy on Paper. I have a form. Fill it in and send me a question. And Bill
we'll
will be. That's right. And Bill will be here in January. And I just, again, thank you so much. Merry Christmas. Have a happy new year. And we'll see you in January. Can you believe it's 2020?
It's hard to believe.
It's hard to believe. Okay, we're going to go to commercial, and I'll be right back with Glenn Erickson. This is exciting. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. And I am back, and I have in the studio with me an author who's, I think this is your first hard, well, first
paperback
book. Mm-hmm. And it is Glenn, I'm going to hold it up, Glenn L. Erickson. And the name of the book is Android Love. I love the cover. A little bit of circuit board there on the heart, which tells us something about what is happening in this book, because circuit boards are very important to this subject, right?
It is. That it's about an android that becomes self-aware, and she's the first of a new model, and a lot of problems come about because she can't be turned off. Due to a glitch in her construction, when she started up, she became both self-aware and unable to be turned off by the manufacturer. And so she and the man that rescues her from captivity, as she calls it, have many adventures together.
Well, I love Marie. I think she is so, I think it's a very clever story. And of course, she's rescued by a guy who drives the truck,
yep.
You know?
That's
just
all.
An ordinary guy. And who would expect that this guy would play such an important role in the future of mankind.
Yep.
Isn't it exciting?
I thoroughly enjoyed writing the story, watching it develop. It was like looking into the future and just writing down what I saw. It was gorgeous.
Well, as you say, it's not just sci-fi. I love sci-fi, all types of sci-fi. But this is also in that range what you're calling speculative fiction.
Yeah, it's speculative.
What could happen? What's going to happen? And some of it, I think, is going to happen pretty soon.
Well, like artificial intelligence is growing, although there's some controversy about that. Androids are, we're getting what they call cobots, which are collaborating robots that work around people without hurting them. That's the first step to becoming more human-like in their responses. You have the people, the robots that look human that they have had on talk shows. And they're growing. They're getting to that point to where I speculate the first ones will be security guards or secretaries or receptionists, to where they probably don't have to move. They can just sit in one place, but they can look and react humanly enough that most people would accept them as being human until something would cause them to know that they were not human.
Huh.
So what would happen is if they get more and more and more advanced to where, what is that tripping point to where the robot becomes self-aware at first, just knows that it exists. That's a huge step. Then wanting to participate in life would be the next step. I don't have enough imagination to figure out all the intervening steps, but I leapt ahead to, it has happened. What are we going to do about it? As I point out in the book, that there's android riots or anti-android riots at one particular point. The possible jobs or the possible professions that androids could go into because, and I explain why, What would be the reaction to the average human being to know that their job has been replaced by a humanoid robot, or is what I call humandroids? It was fun to write, fun to speculate, and then there's one point that many of them don't carry is, what if they developed emotions, true emotions that actually guide their decision-making, not just cold logic, emotions? What if they're, we are assuming that they are infused with the three laws of robotics. Would having emotions allow them to override those, run into them, have a conflict between emotions and the three laws? What would be the result? Mine is they become human enough alike. I'll get it out right. That they become more like us than us. What happens then is they become, get numbered in the millions around the world, and you can't tell by looking at them that they're not human.
I love this kind of thinking. I love imagining, and I think you've done it so well here. And as I said, right from the beginning, we care about Marie. And that's, you know, in a book, the most important thing is that you have to care about the character. And I think the way that you bring Richard in is very smart, because it was unexpected. Just a truck driver, a guy, you know, now living alone, lost his family, and just a very everyday guy who you know, makes chili in the microwave. And so he's so real. And then when Marie comes into his life, the dynamics of it, I thought were just so sweet as we're progressing along. And I really enjoyed just reading it. And every once in a while, I stopped and said, well, how would this work? Would people want androids around to do some of these functions? And it's funny you mentioned one of the jobs is a receptionist. And I worked for a company one time. Well, worked in a company. And we had a receptionist who ate potato chips. I mean, she always had a drawer full of potato chips. And, you know, you do not want a receptionist who eats potato chips, because at the most inconvenient time, just when she thought she could do it, the phone would ring. And so she'd let the phone ring and finish the potato. And we all knew that. And it became such a joke, you know. But yeah, Android who didn't chew potato chips at that company would have been really nice.
I just try to figure out. I picture myself 20, 30 years in the future, and there are androids out there. You know, what are they doing? Are they doctors? Are they lawyers? Are they this? Are they that? How would they affect society, especially if they're based on the three laws? First off, they have to be absolutely honest. That sets them apart from most human beings. they have built-in integrity. They cannot harm a human being. So how would humans take advantage of that? Because they will. They'll try. I've seen that in other stories. But how would they shape society just by their mere existence? It is fun to speculate.
Oh, it is. Well, speculating on that, could they become writers?
I would hope so. I would hope that they would become writers. Like, that would be the next step. They've developed emotions. Can they develop an imagination? Can they speculate on the future, or do they just run on cold, hard facts? That would be another step, maybe above emotion, or maybe before emotion.
Well, they better not plagiarize, because Nora Roberts will come after them.
Well, the thing you get is that a robot would be connected wirelessly to whatever network that they're on. They would know instantly if they were plagiarizing from somebody, and their integrity would not allow them So they would have to come up with original works, original music, original stories, original speculation. They would plow or guide us into new areas of science, because they would be able to be more logical than humans. They're not affected by fatigue. They're not affected by information that they receive that's incorrect, that they don't know is incorrect yet. They would make greater progress because they could share and collaborate wirelessly over whatever network they were on. Information and ability and science would just explode. But if they have volition, would some of them want to do other things? Would some of them want to become artists? singers, musicians, conductors? What could they become? It's fun to speculate. Like, what roles? Like, I had one speculation in my book is the one place that androids would be barred from was the military for whatever reason. Because, one, it would violate their three laws, carrying a weapon or shooting. But they would be barred legally from the military, according to the story. Are there any other professions that they would be barred from? That would be interesting. Child care? Health, social workers? What would they be barred from? That would be interesting speculation. Or could they be barred from something? Could they be granted sentient rights, human rights, citizenship? These are all things we will face eventually.
Yes.
Like, what if we get a computer that becomes sentient, that's self-aware? If you turn it off, is that murder? Okay.
Yeah.
If you change something in it without its permission, does it have permission over, does it have rights over its own existence? Can you upgrade the memory without its permission? Can you alter some part of its programming without its permission and cooperation? Are you violating its rights? These are fun to speculate on, but they're going to have to be answered by people a lot smarter and more connected than me.
But it's something to open people's eyes, and they themselves can start thinking about it. And I think android love, as I said, what you've done here is made a very human story, a very human story, and you've turned this android into somebody that we care about. And that's a great talent. I love that. I think you've done a fantastic job with it. Now, do you have a science background at all? Have you always been in?
Well, I'm an engineer, so I've got the usual physics and mathematics and all those types of background. But I read avidly. I get notices almost daily from various science-related or engineering or technology-related sites, and I read articles all the time. A particular fascination are autonomous vehicles. I'm absolutely fascinated by it because I have a lot of questions nobody's been able to answer, and I have not found the answer to, about autonomous cars. I'm looking forward to it because when I have to turn my license in, I want to wave goodbye to the DMV as I go back out and get into my autonomous vehicle and have it take me home.
Yeah, well, I don't know. They're working on it. I'm not sure that... They will
come out with it. They'll start out in what they call fenced areas, which is where, like, around an airport, in a certain city center, there'll be autonomous vehicles. We already have that, and they're learning from it. But that last 1% of autonomy is taking 99% of the rest of the work.
Yeah.
There are just so many situations that human drivers confront that the car has to have basically artificial intelligence. It almost has to be human to drive a car. But it has to do it without the foibilities of a human driver, being distracted, being tired, being sleepy, intoxicated, whatever.
We are really quite miraculous. Human beings are miraculous. What we can process in a nanosecond, I mean, less than a nanosecond, we can take in something. We can be looking one way, and something happens over here, and we're aware of it so fast that we don't even know how it happened.
Well, we can discriminate between things like a paper bag blowing across the street and a small child running across the street instantly. A computer has a little bit of a problem with that. Computers do not have intuition. I practice while driving. I look to see, okay, I can tell this guy's about to change lanes on me. It's just something I've learned over thousands of miles of driving.
Yeah.
And most of the time I'm accurate. Occasionally I get surprised, like all of us do. But most of us that are experienced drivers, we learn to anticipate traffic. We've learned techniques that help us to avoid the situations others get into. The artificial intelligence that will eventually guide either androids or autonomous cars, or autonomous trains, or dare I say, autonomous planes with passengers on them.
Okay, I don't know about that.
If they ever created one, I would volunteer.
Okay.
Just because I would love the experience, because I know they wouldn't have released it until they worked out at least 99.9% of the kinks. And then even a human being is going to have that one last 0.1% of uncertainty.
Yeah.
So it is going to happen. that airplanes will probably, flying craft will be the last accepted mode of transportation that's autonomous. Cars, trains, trucks, all will happen. We'll even have, what do they call them, those drones. I've seen ones in Saudi Arabia or someplace that they'll actually carry between the hotel and the airport in a one-person drone with your luggage.
Huh.
It flies to the airport, drops you off, and comes back autonomously.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
So it will happen.
I can tell you, when I went to New York, boy, oh boy, would I have loved one of those things. I hadn't been to New York for many years, like 10 years or something. And I went to New York, arrived in Newark. And I had never been through that tunnel from Newark to, I had never been in that tunnel. The most horrible experience. Just awful. It goes on for miles and miles. And I arrived at rush hour. And you don't move. And I'm getting claustrophobic in this tunnel. Boy, I would have loved a drone just lifting me from the airport straight over to the hotel. That would have been terrific.
Yeah, there. I could go on for hours about the advantages of technology, what will change on the road, and I don't want to take up your time with that. It'd be a subject for an entire hour.
Yeah.
But I love that technology is moving forward. We are taking advantage of it. There are those that will resist it.
And
there are those that will actively fight against it.
I think that's one of the nice things about reading your book. You start to think, well, why is this? Why are the people resisting? Why are the androids? Why? You know, the whole question of why. And what would our reaction be?
The main one will be, I point out in the book, is jealousy. When these robots are going to be created, these androids, they will be created in the best image we have of ourselves. They're going to be beautiful, handsome. They'll be well-proportioned. They'll be strong. They'll be kind. They'll be intelligent. They are the kind of person that you would want as a friend if it was a human being. But there's one thing that they have over us. They don't age. So a drop-dead gorgeous woman of 25 is going to be a drop-dead gorgeous of 25 for the next however long she exists until she
That's
fails.
Sort of depressing. So
well, that's the problem. Like, say, what happens if a human and an android that are both 25 get married? When they reach 65, one of them is still, like if it's the woman, she's still a drop-dead gorgeous woman at 25, and the man, who's now 60, 65, is the envy of every other man in the block.
So you don't think we would try to diversify androids and make them look
well? Maybe we would give them the option of aging themselves by going in for upgrades from time to time, to where they could artificially age themselves if they wished.
Because nowadays they do have, they have a skin on some of these that's really like skin, right?
I'm not qualified to answer that. They're getting better all the time. I'm watching how they're developing synthetic muscles. We've got synthetic bones, circulation systems. It's more miniaturization. Like with 3D printing, they're coming up with more ways of doing and with more materials in 3D printing. Who knows what they can come up with? I've been keeping up on 3D printing. They can now use 3D printers to print body parts.
Yes.
That can
oh,
be
I know
grafted
that.
Back into the human because it's made with their own DNA. It doesn't get rejected. So accident victims, whatever, can have reconstruction to get them pretty close back to what they were. They can, who knows what they can do next is where they could build. A perfect example was that one movie where the girl is from reconstructed from a single cell. And
what's
that girl's name? They're saving the world, of course.
Yeah.
It's a guy's a taxi driver. She falls into the roof of the cab.
Oh, yeah. I know which one. Yeah.
Okay. She was reconstructed cell by cell because her DNA was intact, and they had the machinery to rebuild her.
Redo that, yeah.
So maybe what they can do with 3D printers is eventually they can 3D print something that has volition, because we can print circuitry now, flexible circuit boards with the resistors, capacitors, already printed onto the board.
Yeah.
All they have to do is solder in the semiconductors, and they're getting to the point where they can actually, they've actually created flexible, organic, integrated circuits. And they're you know, that's the first step.
That's the first
step. Then they make it smaller. Then they do higher integration. It's And that's what we know about. What's going on in the laboratories?
Well, that's why this book called Android Love by Glenn L. Erickson is so interesting. And Glenn, I know that you love to help authors and promote authors. You are so wonderful here to Joy on Paper. And I love one of the things that you recommend. Of course, it's something I tell everyone, start writing. Just write, Find that joy on paper. Even if that's why I named this Joy on Paper, because there is something so magical, it's just so invigorating to see your words on paper. And you don't have to have a computer. People will say, I can't write because I don't have a computer. You can write by hand. Millions of books have been written by hand. Tolstoy didn't have a computer, believe me. So you can write. And once you see your words on paper, don't you feel good?
You do. Until you read them back to yourself and you realize how many mistakes you made.
Okay, but you've done it.
Exactly. It feels wonderful.
And you can
wonderful.
Get better and better all the time.
And what is really nice is you hand the story to somebody else and you see their eyes light up and they go, wow, I really like that. Then you've made a change in their life. You've conveyed from your mind to their mind an image of what you held when you wrote that bit of work.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I like the other advice you give to people, then get your books. Then
get it down there, get it first, get it. The next step is read it out loud until you can read it out loud to yourself and it sounds smooth. And I want to add to that, this book is actually the second version. The first one I released, I had to quickly yank it back off the market because I found out I was making serious editing errors that I didn't catch using my own techniques. And it's a very simple thing to do, and almost everybody has access to it. Now, if you're using Microsoft Word, I don't know if I'm allowed to promote a product, but I happen to find a text-to-speech area in their Word, and I think it's in other parts of their office suite. I had it read the story back to me, and
it's
so embarrassed at what I found. Giving an example, I would do a global replace of something. Well, what I didn't realize is that there was words before or after that word that now no longer needed to be there or was inappropriate.
Exactly.
So I would go through it, and I was reading it. I couldn't get more than two sentences before I had to stop it, make a correction, back it up, let it read it again until the story. I was walking around the room listening to my story after I finally got it done before I would finally re-release it, because now it sounded right. There were hundreds of errors in the book that I didn't catch reading it out loud myself because I wrote the story. I knew how it was supposed to sound. My eyes would just skip over the inappropriate words.
That's what happens, and that's why it is. This is just fantastic advice. And Microsoft has it, and if you don't use Microsoft, there's also Dragon. They have it, and this hearing your words
exactly
is so important. It's just like when you're writing, you should not just have it on the computer. You should also print it out, because our minds work in different ways. We see things on a computer differently than on the page. We see on a page, you really find little errors that absolutely, your eye skims over on a computer, and then when you hear it read, you hear your words coming, to you, your mind starts working in a different way. So it absolutely, I think it's the best advice, and I just want to encourage everyone, do exactly what Glenn says, write first, then get books, and then listen. You have a lot of editing to do always, right?
Writing is only 5% of the work. Editing's the other 95%. Sweat's the rest.
That's it. But then once you do it and you feel really good, it is wonderful just to know that you can do it. And it's funny, I tell people a page a day. And you're a business person, you're an engineer, you have lots of other things going on in your life. But you can find that time to do a page a day.
People will find the time to do what is important to them.
Yes.
The best thing I ever did was turn the TV off.
Yeah. That's, oh, yes. Particularly now.
Big time waster.
Exactly. Turn the TV off. Don't watch the same show over and over. Make something magical in your life, because even if, and it can be any type of book. You might write a memoir. You might, like Glenn here, go into sci-fi, speculative fiction. You might write a story about your great-grandmother.
Yep.
Whatever. Or I love also people who write cookbooks and then put the story about that recipe, where they got it from, who in their family wrote it and used it. So there are so many ways that you can find this outlet.
Exactly. You have to understand that human beings don't think in words. They think in pictures. They visualize everything. And since we can't project images mind to mind, the only method, the only media we have is writing. And writing can be turned into visual media, which then can be taken in. The best books I've ever read, regardless of genre, were the ones where the authors so skillfully wrote the words that I was no longer really reading the words. My eyes were seeing the words, but my mind was converting them into a visual movie.
Which happens here in Android Love, because I could visualize Marie running. I love that. I could even visualize her being on the roof. All of these things, I thought, and you're right, I'm like going along and I forget I'm reading. And that's always makes me feel so good, because I know then that the author has really managed to do that magical thing of reaching into our hearts and minds. And that's so important.
It is. You give them just enough information that they can fill and paint the rest of the picture with their own life experience.
Oh,
so, like, I really never describe the characters in the book. You have to come up with your own descriptions of what does a truck driver look like?
Yeah.
What does a beautiful woman look like?
And I see it in my mind. Android Love is available on Amazon.
Yes.
And do you have? Are you on social media yet? Do you not really?
I don't know how to be on social media. I need to listen to somebody who knows how to do that.
Yeah, you need to get into it, and that's the next step.
That okay. is for me.
And because an author has to do a lot of things.
Yeah, I need to actually create an author website, and that's what I'm going to do next week.
Okay, well that's wonderful, because. And I'm sure this is there's more of these books to come along.
Well, I've actually got other books that I'm tempted. I've got two that I've written that I can't publish because I can't come up with covers. I don't know what to put on the cover.
Oh.
So there's two other books. One of them has to do with a sentient ship, and the other one has to do with an ancient alien.
Okay.
But I can't come up with covers, so I can't publish them. But they will also be on Amazon when I finally figure it out.
Okay. Well, these things come to you. But I do like this heart with the circuit board. Having been in the computer business and having been in the development of computer programs, oh boy, I've had a lot of business with circuit boards. Anyway, remember everybody, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper.
Absolutely.
Or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to have those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or maybe a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you start writing, just like Glenn started writing, and just have fun with it. Enjoy it. Just, there is so much joy in life, isn't there?
There is, if you look for it, and you do it.
If you look for it. And please, everybody, just have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And I've got some wonderful guests coming up in the new year. It is going to be an exciting time. Anyway, thank you, Big Ed in the control room. I am so appreciative of all he does for me. Ah, he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Everybody, bye-bye now. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Pastor.